DW Africa Link.
Is South Africa already a mafia state, or is it on the brink? That's the question on many people's minds, both inside and outside of South Africa. In fact, South Africa's acting police minister Feroz Khachalia issued a stark warning. Organized crime is so rampant that it threatens South Africa's national security, and it was possible the country could go the way of Colombia or Ecuador in South America. Today, we'll discuss how organized crime is holding South Africa back and the potential for change that lies ahead. I'm Kai Nebe. This is Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from across Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
The police minister's admission was seismic, given South Africa's already high violent crime rates and entrenched gang violence in some communities. However, the recent trend of criminal networks infiltrating politics, turning government institutions and state utilities into tools of organized crime, has raised the stakes. And honestly, this is really bad news for South Africa's ruling coalition. To get a better handle of the situation, I'm now joined by DW correspondent Diane Hawker in Johannesburg and Professor André Duvenager from the Northwest University, who has warned of South Africa becoming a so-called mafia state. I started off by asking him what criteria needs to be met for this classification.
I must say that this is a well-known phenomenon also historically, in the sense of Italy, Japan, Russia, and if you look at the moment to Vladimir Putin, you will find some parallels within the context of a mafia state. You need to combine two things. The one is what we can call a weakening state. That is a state that cannot exercise its authority in a proper way, basically controlling its borders, create an effective, efficient framework for development, and basically where you find institutional and political decay. And clearly that is the case in South Africa. To give you one statistic, South Africa's local governments, between 60 and 80% of them have forms of dysfunctionality towards serious dysfunctionality. Now, within the context of a weakening state, there exist power vacuums. And now you are getting groupings playing into these power vacuums. And some of them are criminal in their orientation. So what is developing is a relationship between politicians on the one side and criminals on the other side.
Particularly on that, I just want to bring Diane in here, because Diane has actually reported on this. Diane, when Professor Duvenager here is talking about that interplay between politics and crime, what are sort of the big cases that are known of in South Africa that perhaps could describe this compared, when you look at your reporting, for instance?
Well, I would say the big one that South Africans are currently focused on is the Tembisa hospital scandal, in which we recently saw quite damning allegations come out against politically connected business people, allegedly looting 2 billion rands worth of money that's meant to have been spent in the hospital space. That's a recent one. But if we look a little bit further back in our history, we also have the state capture period, which took place under the presidency of former President Jacob Zuma. And I would say that that is where we really saw this kind of business and political interplay expanding and almost growing like a cancer within South Africa. The state capture period, we saw a situation where institutions were actively being destroyed or hampered in any efforts to stop the growth of state capture. But at the same time, we also saw highly politically connected people ensuring that they can capture the state. So that when we say capture the state, we mean that they are able to influence decision-making in the state so that it benefits their business dealings, meaning that they were able to get contracts from the government. And oftentimes those contracts were not delivered efficiently and effectively, impacting communities.
Right. And exactly that, because from what I can gather, Prof, when I, if I come back to you, that state capture thing from a political standpoint, you know, was of course like a shocking event. But what we are seeing now in South Africa, there's almost like a sinister progression, perhaps, which is now involving extortion, which is also involving political killings, the killings of individuals who are trying to stop this. Off the top of my head, I can think of the cases of Babita Diokaran, who was involved with the whistleblowing in that Tembisa hospital case, but also more recently, the lawyer Boa Fanikak, who was also killed in relation to investigations he was doing. Why is this such a concerning development in your eye?
Well, to start with, and I'm going to continue where Diane stopped, a mafia state, one of the core features is endemic and systemic corruption, ending up to the levels of institutionalization where you get state capture. And this is not a new phenomenon. It started probably in the late 80s, where we already had the so-called arms deal and the Sereti Commission. And after that, we had the Morani Commission investigating political assassinations. And to give you one academic statistic, between 2000 and 2015, there were something like 1,000 political assassinations or attempted assassinations. And these assassinations seems to be on the increase before elections. And this is emphasizing the connection between criminals, we call them tenderpreneurs in some way, and politicians. They are putting politicians in places in order to serve their purposes, and then they will pay these politicians. Now, the core of state capture is that our criminal justice system has become completely dysfunctional. I think the statistic at the moment is that the success rate of the National Prosecution Authority, the NPA, under the leadership of Shamila Betoy, and that was after the Zuma period of official state capture, was something like 5%. She had to implement the findings of the Zondo Commission, but it was a complete failure. And I think at the moment, listening to Lieutenant General Makwanazi, as well as other academics and people giving testimony, it is clear that after Zuma, state capture continued. Some will even argue it worsened in some way.
And Diane, I mean, it is one thing for Professor Duffenacher and other analysts to say, you know, this is the state we're in, but it's quite another thing, perhaps, for the acting police minister, who he also said that we are in danger of becoming the next Ecuador or Colombia in terms of criminal enterprise or organized crime having a significant influence on government and its government decisions. This would, to me, if I were living in South Africa, strike quite a bit of fear. I mean, is this something that is also being discussed among ordinary South Africans? Or is there perhaps a sort of sense that, you know, how is this different to what we were experiencing in the last 20 years or so?
No, there definitely is a sense amongst citizens, academics, those in the policing space and journalists that there is a change or there has been a change. You know, South Africa has always had an element of criminality, and I don't think we can ever deny that. For example, in the Western Cape, drug crime has always been a big issue. But what we are now seeing is a level of organization in the crime that is quite different. And we're also seeing a level of connection to state actors that is different. We also seeing the state being targeted in the crimes, which is something that we haven't previously seen. So you mentioned extortion, for example. That has been something that has been growing over time in South Africa. But I would say now it has really gotten to a point of great concern and in a way out of control. Because the people involved in extortion rings are not only targeting ordinary citizens, but they are also targeting government projects. And I did a story for Deutsche Welle on this recently, where a government project was stopped in the Western Cape because money was being demanded. That shows that the state does not have the control that it should have. If state projects are being stopped by criminals, that is a major concern. And I think South Africans are very concerned. Even though we see reports come out from different commissions of inquiry, whether it be the State Capture Commission or other commissions, we are not seeing the follow through in the criminal justice system where people are actually going to jail. So there's all this publication of what we know and what we see, but why are handcuffs not being put on people's wrists and why are people not being taken to jail? And I would say that is one of the biggest concerns that South Africans have.
So I want to get into that in just a moment. But first, and maybe this is a question to both of you, because just for people who are perhaps not familiar with the South African context, what types of extortion are we talking about? Is it something that is like sort of almost could be written off as a victimless crime because it's got to do with money that no normal citizens never see? Or is it sort of even really grassroots stuff that is affecting people on a daily life? This is a question to both of you, perhaps.
Well, I would start by trying to differentiate between organized crime on the one side and ordinary criminality at the grassroots. We are talking about around 80 murders a day, not politically, ordinary murders. We are talking about more than 120 rape cases a day. The type of crime you are referring to is a more organized form of crime. And it's interesting, in 2023, the Global Peace Index put South Africa number 7 in the world as far as organized crime is concerned, on the same level than, for example, countries like Venezuela, Afghanistan, El Salvador, and so on. And what's also important is that this crime is not isolated to South Africa. In a way, South Africa has become a hub for crime on the African continent, as well as within the context of the globe. And together with crime, you are getting political activities as well, because crime and politics are working together, not only within the South African context, but also within an international context.
Maybe I can just come in there regarding your question about the different types. So just to contextualize, I would say that we are dealing with a variety of complex crimes taking place. One area that has been going on for a long time in South Africa has been the tender space. So essentially, when government puts out requests for work, maybe they want to build a school or provide services to government, they will put out tenders and they will ask private business people to complete that work. What we've seen over time is that the private business people who are tendering, sometimes and oftentimes, the people who win those tenders are not the most qualified people in that area. They are oftentimes politically connected and get the jobs because of the political connection that they have. And there also has been evidence that that money has been funneled back to the ANC or members of the ANC. It's the African National Congress, which has been the ruling party in the past years and now is the majority party of a governing coalition. So that's where that linkage between the politics and tenders comes up. Now, the professor also spoke a bit about the situation of political killings. And I do want to also contextualize that a little bit for our listeners to say, you know, why are why would we even have a term such as political killings? Well, a lot of the times when it comes to these tenders, the decision makers are political players who get either into the municipalities or provincial government or even national government space. And so it benefits those involved in the tender scheme if people that they know will vote in their favor to get that tender are in position. So there's the benefit of having the actual job of being a councillor or a member of provincial government. But then in addition, if you are in the right portfolio, you could have a lot of control. You could have control of money that's meant to be spent on water projects, for example, and then put your associates in place for any work relating to those projects. And that's how it becomes a very contentious space, because people then try to kill or do kill opponents because they want to have access to that funding.
Right. And actually, I want to talk a little bit about that, because we know that South Africa's ruling coalition is battling to keep things together. The ANC, which, you know, has seen its voting share nosedive, I mean, quite spectacularly in the last few years, is still in power to a certain degree, but it's almost as if that their days are a little bit numbered. And with the context that we've talked about, this quite scary situation, I would wonder, like, is this a situation where the voting people can say, look, this is not what we signed up for, this is not what we wanted? I mean, evidence of this, I would say, is President Ramaphosa recently berating ANC councillors, about 5,000 of them. I think it was about a month ago, where he basically said, without you, we are nothing, basically urging them to do a better job. But Is the political core so rotten that we're actually beyond that now?
I think we are probably beyond it at this point. We are yet again going for an election towards the end of 2026. That is a local government elections. And the most recent surveys are indicating where the ANC received 40% nationally in the 2024 election, that support may drop to around 30%. And some analysts are saying it may go down as low as close to 20%. What is clear to me is that in the 2021 local elections, we had something like 70 hung councils. That is where there's no absolute majority coming from a single party. At this point, I believe that this total can maybe double. And what is clear to many is that the ANC, like many other freedom movements, is coming to the end of their term. And people believe that the final straw will probably be around the 2029 national and provincial elections. But it's an open question if Cyril Ramaphosa as president is going to survive until 2029. So there's a lot of instability within the ANC. The ANC is only a shadow of what it was in the past. And at the moment, these corruption allegations implicating basically all the senior people within the ANC, from Cyril Ramaphosa to his deputy, to the Secretary General of the ANC, to previous ANC leaders going as back as Jacob Zuma in 2005 or maybe even before that. I think that especially in the metros, the ANC is in severe trouble. The big question on the other side is, will coalitions bring the stability we need and effective and good governance? Because there's a lot of groupings. To give you one figure, there's going to be 472 parties competing in the 2026 elections.
And that's a very crowded field. I just want to come to you, Diane. First of all, would you sort of tend to agree with what Professor de Vanagh has said regarding the ailing ANC? And the next thing I want to ask as a follow-up question to that is that The opposition, let's just say the DA, but also a number of other political parties, have always kind of made that a rhetorical thing, that the reason why the country is not running well is because of the ANC. The ANC is inefficient. The ANC is corrupt. I think as from listening to what you both have been saying, it goes a bit deeper than that, right?
Yes, I would say it's you know, a complex picture that I don't know if I can answer all of it today, but definitely the ANC is a problem, and in a way, it's a party that's eating itself. You know, its corruption has led many South Africans to be doubtful of its ability to lead, but also it's hasn't improved or even really tried to improve when criticized by the public. You know, there's a famous saying that was made a few years ago by one of the ANC members, where people were complaining that the Rand was being battered by various corruption allegations, and she said, "Don't worry, if the Rand falls, the ANC will pick it up." You know, so there's this level of arrogance that has existed within the ANC, which South Africans are very frustrated with. But on the other side, there is a concern about who else. You know, the opposition hasn't been able to really come forward over the years and effectively get the numbers that the ANC has had. Yes, we've seen growth in some areas. For example, the MK party, which came into the picture this year, is now the third biggest party in the country.
And also in the metros, particularly in the metros, there's been a change in voting patterns, right?
There has been a change in voting patterns. But at the same time, the metro municipalities like Johannesburg, for example, South Africa's economic hub, it has had, I think, 5 different mayors within the past few years because of the instability of coalition government. And that's where we are seeing a challenge. Even though the ANC's numbers are decreasing, the other parties are not getting outright wins, and therefore they have to join coalitions. And even within those coalitions, there is a lot of jockeying for positions. Who's going to get the mayorship? Who's going to be the deputy mayor? Who's going to be in charge of the finance portfolio, because there's a lot of money there? Who's going to be in charge of anything like public works, because there's a lot of money there? And so it leads to a lot of instability in these municipalities. And to be honest, municipalities are where the majority of basic services are delivered to South Africans. So water infrastructure, roads, refuse removal, that's all managed at municipal level. So when municipalities are unstable, it really creates a lot of instability in the lives of ordinary people. It also looks like South Africans want to know, but they also want action. A lot of the comments that I'm seeing are people saying there shouldn't just be a commission. We want heads to roll. If there is evidence of wrongdoing, people should be fired. And that would be the expectation from ordinary citizens. Whether we'll see it or not, I don't know. But that's what South Africans want to see.
What are the inherent dangers for perhaps the neighbors of South Africa, your Namibias, your Mozambiques, your Botswanas, if, for example, this state or this mafia state just grows legs and continues to run?
I think we need to say that South Africa as a country is on a failing trajectory if we are not going to make a drastic turn in a certain direction, in another direction. We are going for failure. The implications are far-reaching. At the moment, there are about 5 million illegal immigrants in South Africa. The majority coming from Mozambique, who can be seen as also a failed state, and the other one, Zimbabwe, who is also a failed state as a regard of the controversial land reform. And there's no doubt that South Africa and the failing economy.
Thanks so much, Professor André Duvenara and Diane Hawker, for your insights.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
And as you've heard in that conversation, while the challenges are immense, South Africa is not without hope. Across the country, voices are speaking out, communities are organizing, and institutions are being called to account, at least publicly. The fight against organized crime is far from over, but with resilience, reform and unity, some optimists believe South Africa can chart a new and more effective course. That's a wrap for today's edition of Africa Link. Remember, you're not just a listener, but also an integral part of our community. Your insights and thoughts are vital in shaping our discussion and programming, so please share them with us. You can find all the Africa Link episodes on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. I'm Kai Nebe, and until next time, it's bye for now.
DW. Made for mind.